Hello and welcome to Rick's Martini Bar. I'm here, Jerry McCarty, here with Rick Farmelo and Amanda Raymond. Cheers.
Cheers.
And we have a special guest, film director Dennis Devine, who was nice enough to invite me to his premiere yesterday of DeWitt and Maria, a movie that I saw down in Hollywood with him. And welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. Welcome.
Okay. Great to have you here. And just briefly, we're going to talk because of Halloween about classic monsters, but let's talk.
You'll notice that's not Frank Sinatra in the background.
No, that's not.
Usually you get Sinatra or Dean Martin or Sammy Davis Jr. You'll notice that's not Frank Sinatra.
But before we do, let's talk about DeWitt Maria. I know that the premiere was yesterday, and it was great. Great job. My daughter came with me. She loved it. And I know you got a Facebook fan page, but why don't you give a plug in there for the...
All right. Let me give a plug. The website for the movie is DeWitt, D-E-W-I-T-T, and Maria Movie, all one word, DeWittAndMariaMovie.com. And the movie's showing, there's a showing of the movie in a theater in Orange. And I actually won't be able to attend because I'll be working on another movie at that date. Uh-huh. But I think some of the cast members will be there for sure. And the producer/writer will be there. And it's in Orange,
cool.
The city of Orange.
City of Orange in California.
So. Yeah, so you can follow the release and whatnot of the film via the website then.
Awesome, but a really nice movie, like a romantic comedy, small type movie, and you can look for it on IMDb and you can get a little synopsis of it, but really good, really nice, nice small film, and I'll say, but maybe it's not, but a departure from what you normally do.
It is, I have done, actually, this is the third romantic comedy, the next film I'm working on.
And I've seen two of them.
Yeah, and the next,
I saw Guitar Master.
That's right, Guitar Master is one of my favorite films. And the next film I'm working on is also a romantic comedy with Ben Savage and Jake Busey in it. Ben Savage from Boy Meets World.
Nice.
And I'm a crew guy. I'll be wearing many hats. But the writer-director is Damian Stevens, who also worked as a crew guy on the DeWitt and Maria.
Wow.
So we have the group of friends, Jason, his brother, also the three of us, and Robert Ryan, I'd say the four of us, work on each other's films.
It's a racket. It's like a mob. You can't work on anybody else's film. But
it's our own New World, Corman type of studio.
Nice. Well, I will give a little preface. We have a lot of fans in Michigan, and Dennis is a hometown Detroiter.
That's right.
In fact, he lived right across the street from me, and I remember going to his house and going down in the basement, which you California people don't understand, but we have basements.
I've heard of a basement.
You've seen horror movies. You should
there you go.
Basement. Yeah. Don't go in the basement.
And Dennis's basement, he had classic Universal. Well, you know what? I'm going to get there a different way because we saw the movie, we saw his premiere yesterday at the Lemley, and Carl Lemley was the founder of all of those, right?
He was the owner of, the owner of Universal.
The owner of Universal.
He made silent films, with Lon Chaney. And then they got into the sound era, and he did, Frankenstein, Old Dark House, The Mummy, Bride of Frankenstein. That was under his...
And when I first met Dennis, I saw those classic monsters, The Mummy and Frankenstein, mm-hmm. and... I knew that he was a fan of those, and I guess that's my first question is, how do you, and Rick, I know you're a big fan of him too, but how in the world did, and I am too, but how do we become fans of movies from the 30s when we all grew up in the 60s and 70s?
You always can answer it.
Well, for me, my dad was a big horror film fan, and so he watched them, and I have a lot of brothers and sisters, not as many as Jerry, but I do have some sisters.
He's like the King family.
I have more sisters than he does.
He has no other brothers.
Because he has zero. But
the Osmonds are jealous.
But my brother Mike and I were the only two in the family who just drew like magnets to the horror film. So my dad would put them on, and my brother Mike and I would watch them. But
when you say he put them on,
you know, TV on maybe Saturday. Saturday mornings, they had a
Sir Graves Gasly was the host. And you know, that's something that's missing from TV now. You don't have those shows anymore.
And later we had the Ghoul, but he showed bad news.
The Ghoul, yeah.
But Sir Graves.
And we had the 4:30 movie where they did Monster Week or something like that.
That's I had the same experience. I mean, I grew up watching these. They're all in prime time. They weren't like in the middle of the night, like later on.
Right, right.
They'd be on during the afternoon, on Saturday afternoon. So we grew up. You only had TV, you know, there's nothing else.
Right.
So it's like we grew up watching these from a very early age, and I used to collect the little castle films, 8mm castle films, and then of course I got into 16mm after, and it's gone on. But I mean, when you're a little kid, I mean, the TV is really, you're influenced heavily by what's on TV.
But it's amazing that those images, like the Munsters, the television show was popular back then.
So cool.
And they copied the classic.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was Grandpa was Bela Lugosi and Herman was Boris Karloff. They copied those characters instead of going.
At the time that the Munsters came out, there was a huge like monster craze.
Yeah.
In the mid '60s, like Famous Monsters, the film then was out, and the films are on TV, and there was this huge fandom thing that was happening. So that's why CBS did the Munsters. It was like, we got to cash in on this monster thing. Even though the films are 40 years old or whatever, I mean,
that's you know, amazing to me.
Kids love them, so
that they were just that popular back then. From that. So, what are some of your favorite classic monster movies? If somebody that hasn't experienced the genre like you have, what would you recommend? What would be a good primer for them? I guess.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, if you had to recommend somebody to see two of these films. I mean, they're not out anymore. I mean,
yeah, it's hard to see them.
They're hard to find.
They're on DVD. Universal has put them on, put them in packages now. You don't just buy Frankenstein by itself. You buy it, the whole Frankenstein series.
See, but people go to Netflix now, and if you Netflix Frankenstein, you got a 50-50 shot of getting that crappy Robert De Niro Frankenstein.
Yeah, I mean, my personal thing, and Dennis has his own, I'm sure. Would be to go back to like the 30s and start with like Bride of Frankenstein. Like that's my favorite horror movie, Bride of Frankenstein. Start with that and
which Ron Howard and Brian Grazer are making a remake of, Bride of Frankenstein, which probably will not be.
You know what?
as good as those guys are,
they're making a remake of a sequel.
They're making a remake of a sequel, probably for $40 million.
Yeah,
which I think was maybe part of the charm of those things too, was that they were so low budget.
Yeah,
I mean, at the time, were they considered low budget,
honestly,
or were they?
To be honest with you, they were considered B movies, like the first two Frankensteins, or the first three Frankensteins with Karloff. They were considered B movies, but they had pretty big budgets. They had good writers. They had really good sets. They look at the sets. They don't look cheap. I mean, they're pretty first class.
Yeah.
So they had like A budgets for what were considered B movies.
Yeah.
And then in the 40s, they started doing lower budget, after the Wolfman, they started doing the sequels, and the budgets got lower, and there actually were B-movies.
So you'd say Bride of Frankenstein. Dennis, what would you be your recommendation?
Well, it's hard for me to pick one over another, but I actually like Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein as a package, because the thing about the original Frankenstein is, from what I've read, of course, I was not alive in the
40s. None of us were.
But it was so shocking to audiences that, people were fainting and screaming and running out of theaters. The only time I've ever seen that is with The Exorcist, when I saw it with my dad. And
this is the theme song to Frankenstein, by the way. How appropriate.
Oh, yeah. And I was fairly young when I saw it, because I was under 17, but I went in because with my dad. And two girls actually screamed and ran out of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually was one of the things that influenced me to get into filmmaking.
I said,
this is so cool.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea that Frankenstein, if you watch it thinking that, hey, think of this as 1931.
Yeah. Right.
And, it's very tame by today's standards, but it's pretty shocking. They even cut out some of the scenes in the original.
But tame by today's standards, but I bet you if they made it today, they wouldn't put him with the little girl. They throw in the
kid. They'd make it worse.
You think so?
Yeah, I think
they'd. I don't think they'd let him kill the kid.
I do.
Do you really?
Today's horror films? That's nothing.
What?
They didn't show it back in 1931. They just
I think
they
could
cut the bit out where he threw it in the water because they thought it was
right.
Censors thought it was too violent. Karloff apparently he was supposed to sort of put her in the water because
right.
he thought she was like a flower.
Right.
Because they're throwing flowers,
right, right.
And they filled flower petals.
And he ran out.
And so he ran out of petals. Like, well, oh, you're pretty. I'll put you. So he kind of did this. But James Whale directed him to pick her up and throw her over his head, like, you know, like it's like a shot put. And so it became a real violent thing. And so the censors said no.
Did they have that, like, no children were hurt in the filming of this movie?
Well, they sure did. They showed the guy carrying her. Yeah.
And they're both short films, really. They're not that long.
Not like 70 minutes.
You could watch those two as a package.
And it's the same director.
Yes.
And they actually changed the ending of the first one. In the first Frankenstein, he actually was supposed to die. Okay. Wow. But they left it ambiguous, and they actually added, like when they filmed it, they shot it, and he was dead. And they said, you know, we may want to do a sequel to this.
Wow.
So they added him, and they didn't show him in bed. But they said, oh, he's going to be okay and all this jazz. And then opening it up for a sequel, which they did. And the sequel just follows it, like, right as he's recovering from being thrown from the windmill. So it's a real linear.
Wow.
It seems like story. One movie. That's why I say I would
put it together
and watch it.
That's a good idea, yeah.
And one other interesting trivia note is that they offered that role of the monster to Bela Lugosi. Mm-hmm. And he turned it down because there were no lines. And of course, it made Boris Karloff famous. But Bela Lugosi later played the monster in the
Frankenstein
Meets the Wolfman.
Wow,
he's terrible.
He overacts. Yeah. The movie's great except for Bela Lugosi.
Well, he was supposed to be blind because in the previous film they transported Igor's brain into his head, and it didn't work. You know, the blood didn't rush, whatever. Mm. So he was blind at the very end of Mr. Frankenstein. So they thought we're gonna have him blind in this movie. So you see, but they decided to cut out all the reference to him being blind because he actually talked. Lugosi actually talked in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, but it was so absurd the things he was saying that they said we're gonna cut out all the dialogue because it looks ridiculous. But they didn't cut out the reference to him being blind. So you see him kind of stumbling around and tripping over stuff. And you're like, what is he acting like that for? Well, it's because they were filming him. He's supposed to be blind.
Wow.
But there's no reference to it in the movie when you see that, so it seems a little absurd, him.
Right. And he's not very big. And do you like
right.
the monster? Yeah. The monster. Yeah.
I actually like Glenn Strange.
Glenn Strange was good.
Because he's 6'5". He was a big guy.
Yeah, he looked a little like Karloff.
Which what movie was he in?
He was in three of them.
He was in three of them. House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, and Evan Costello
Meets the Monster. And at Universal Horror Films in 1948.
Wow.
That was then.
That was
really
the last of the monsters at Universal.
Wow, Abbott Costello did it.
But it's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I'd almost put that in there, like, people should see that, too.
If you only watched one, honestly, that might be the one.
Yeah.
Really?
It's a great movie.
And Lugosi's good. He's actually underplays the role.
He plays Dracula.
He plays Dracula.
They all play the guys who play the role, you know, Lon Chaney and Lugosi, they play it straight. They don't play it for humor.
Right,
and that's
right.
why it works. And Abbott Costello are running around, scared and all this jazz, but the monsters are playing completely straight, which is why it works.
Yeah.
Wow. But it is still amazing to me that resurgence just keeps happening. I mean, right, even now, the Mummy movie, you know, the Brandon Fraser thing.
Yeah.
Huge money.
The first two Mummy movies, the ones they did, I loved those movies, and I thought they were actually better than the original Mummy movies. But I still haven't seen a Frankenstein that I like better, or a Wolfman that I like better than Universal.
I wish the latest Wolfman would have been better.
Okay,
but good. You know,
What about what do you think of American Werewolf in London?
American Werewolf in London, and I like it, the one with Dee Wallace. What's that?
Oh, the Wolfen.
Wolfen.
No, not Wolfen.
Dee Wallace was in.
I'll think of it in a second.
Okay.
But
I can't remember.
But the American Wolf in London, I liked. I was
good.
I was skeptical. I got that. I wasn't crazy about it. It was very so wolf-like.
Yeah,
it looked more like a wolf than a man.
Yeah,
right. That bothered me a little. But it's a real good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that I think was good about that movie was it was right when the special effects were.
Right.
When John Landis were just starting in that transformation.
Rick Baker,
that was like one of his very first big movies, and he changed makeup.
And we waited till the end though to see that. Now it is so common that they, you know, it's like Jaws. It's like the best part of that movie is you never see the shark until the end.
Right. There was a reason for that.
I know. It's because
such a bad shark. And it couldn't work.
So Spielberg couldn't use it. But that was what made it really good. And you know, all the sequels are terrible because the shark's in the whole thing.
Right. He has a song in one of them. I think. I thought that was going too far.
It's a musical.
That was Jaws 3D.
Yeah, but American Werewolf in London, I think what I didn't like is the wolf. He looked too much like a wolf. And it had a little bit of the John Landis touch that I didn't like, where all the cars crashed.
He's
going to
have a car crash.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it was a great movie.
He made a movie about the Navy one time, had car crashes. I don't know how to pull that off.
And we have to talk about your opinion of vampires in Twilight, which apparently vampires have highlights in their hair and
whatever.
So have you seen those guys?
I have to admit I have not My daughters went to see them and I said, well, do they suck blood? And they said no.
It's Melrose Place with teeth.
I'm good with everything about it except for I'm glad that genre exists and that it continues, which is amazing that it continues to go on. That story continues to be retold. But the vampires don't eat people.
Yeah.
They eat animals, and the wolf men protect people from vampires. Mm. It's like a weird thing, and the best looking people are the vampires, the guys, and whereas we want the best looking people to be the women. Well, yeah. Speaking
we
for
always
us.
Do.
but the women are not as the women are not as attractive as the men.
What about Interview with the Vampire? What's your take on that?
Oh, I like that movie.
I thought it was.
Did you really like Interview with the Vampire?
I liked it.
You liked it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
I did not.
I did. I just didn't. Lestat and Tom Cruise and
I really like the stuff with Kristen Dunst as it captured in time as a 13-year-old and she's aged.
I thought that was ingenious.
That was really great. They tried to mimic that and that let the Right One In is kind of similarly themed. I don't know if you saw that. That was the foreign film and then they just Let Me In as the American remake, which was only a year. But it's a pretty good film though. If you like vampire films, I mean. And you want to see a real vampire and not, you know, whatever, the Melrose Place. I recommend Let the Right One In or Let Me In if you want to hear the English-speaking version.
And also, I should put a shout-out for the Hammer films.
Hammer films.
Came along, like, you know, Americans stopped making horror films. The horror cycle ended in the 40s. And they started going into sci-fi. Creature from the Black Lagoon, and it came from outer space. Things like that. Forbidden Planet.
Right.
In the 50s. England has said, no, we're going to start making horror movies.
Right.
So they did Curse of Frankenstein was the first one. They did Horror of Dracula after. And those are good. I mean, later on they get a little too much.
Right.
But, I mean, the Hammer films are really cool.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee really was a great horror.
Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, I mean, you can't beat those two guys.
Right,
So they were actually great.
The Vincent Price movies, The House to Wax and all those, were those Universal or were those?
No, he made movies for different studios.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't any one particular studio. Mm-hmm. But I love the Vincent Price. The Roger Corman Vincent Price was in the 60s. Those are great, man. All the Edgar Allan Poe movies and Carl Hutton, some of them. And
House of Wax
those.
Really holds up.
I love those.
I saw it in the theater about 5 years
really
ago.
Good. Yep, that's a great
This is still good.
It's a remake of Mystery of the Wax Museum, which is the 30s Lionel Atwell movie. I know too much. I talk all night.
Wow. Well, we have shot our time, but I want to thank.
Don't you want to see what she likes in horror films?
Okay, horror films, Amanda. Go ahead. Tell me your.
I do have to agree that I love the first Mummy with Brendan Fraser. Of course, the classics are great. You know, the original Mummy and original Dracula, Bela Lugosi was fantastic. Interview the Vampire. I liked the more recent 1990s Dracula with Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing.
Oh, yeah.
And the writer is Mina.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
right.
That's a great one. I wanted to bring that up too. Is that they're doing an animated Hotel Transylvania where Van Helsing is searching for the monsters, a descendant of Van Helsing is searching for the monsters, and he finds them all in a hotel because they're not scary to people anymore. And they're in a hotel.
Sounds like a Rankin and Bass special.
No, it's not a bad thing.
I'm just saying.
It'll be interesting. Well, it'll be, but it's an animation one. Sony Pictures will do it.
I'm sure it'll be good.
Can I plug a couple of my
horror movies? Oh, yeah. Dennis Devine, plug your horror movies.
Well, Caregiver, which is available on Netflix or Blockbuster Online, and Necrosis, which is also available on either. Necrosis, like dying, N-E-C-R-O-S-I-S. And Caregiver, make sure you get
our
the one.
Our listeners can't spell words.
Caregiver, make sure you rent the Caregiver that I directed, not the art film Caregiver.
So. You search Dennis Devine on IMDb, and you'll see this list of movies. And then you just put them in your Netflix queue. Yeah. That's there what you get.
But those two I recommend the most, cool. Caregiver and Necrosis.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. But just briefly, and we're way over our
Don't
time.
Don't we always go over?
We always go over our time. But just briefly on just this, kind of the status of horror films in general, mm-hmm. which you do, mm-hmm. is, you know, now the special effects are so good. Right. Like, we saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We just saw the guy with the chainsaw and then blood.
Right. Yeah.
But now they can actually show a chainsaw inside someone and show it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I actually feel that right now, today, versus even 5 years ago, that the gore is going to direct-to-video films, and that the effects you're talking about are not on bigger horror films that are released in theaters anymore. Right. So, I mean, we'll see with Saw if they go back to the new Saws coming out, and maybe we'll see a lot of gore.
Right.
I'm not sure. But I think, in general, the horror films coming out the last couple of years have been pulling back on gore if they're theatrical. But if they're going direct-to-video...
Even like the Freddy and Jason stuff.
Yeah.
Really?
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think things aren't, for whatever reason, they're probably not quite as gory or as intense as they used to be.
But that genre has got to be the most profitable.
Yeah.
Cheap to make.
Right.
Make a whole lot of money.
Especially make a movie, right?
Especially with the social media stuff. I mean, you can create this hype.
Yeah.
Like Paranormal Activity. I mean, there's just so many people
who make red food color and never go out of business.
Right.
Even Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch Project. Yeah. I mean, just a little. Yeah.
Right. But no gore in those.
Real too.
Right. That's right. No gore in those movies. Yeah. Cool. Well, anyway, well, thank you again, Dennis, for coming. I got to name a couple of our sponsors. We got, of course, PB Imaging. And if you visit our website, you can get a link to pbimaging.com and visit them. And then audible.com. I'm still listening to that Steve Martin autobiography, which is so good. And and you can get these at the www.mccartymetro.com. Download this podcast.
It costs a bag of Halloween candy. This
no, it is free.
It's free.
You can get this. You can get this podcast for free at www.mccartymetro.com. Dennis Devine, thank you for coming. Yeah. Cheers, everybody.
And happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Don't eat unwrapped candy, please.